We're so happy to have Rachel Maddow with us this part of the show. She's hosted the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America, and she's a political analyst for MSNBC, and her career is really taking off. She's getting a lot of airtime, and I think deservedly so. She's great to watch on MSNBC. We'll be looking at, of course, Kentucky and Oregon, and we may start with a little talk about Barbara Walters, too, because we just had Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. We just spoke with Barbara Walters, and I don't know if you had a chance to see any of her book, but I was so struck reading the early stories of how many of her male co-hosts could not stand the fact that she was on the air with them and treated her with a great deal of disdain for a long period of time. And I wonder if things have changed. Here you are now, a co-host on major broadcasts looking at politics. Is it easy for you, or are the males who are on the show treating you as an equal partner, or is there still a ways to go?
You know, it's so interesting that that question is so much brought to the fore right now because Hillary Clinton is in the presidential race and because the treatment of her by the media has become a topic of political discussion. And it very quickly turned around, and kind of for the first time in the last couple of months, after all the time I've been in media, I'm starting to get asked that question. That's almost more interesting to me, I think, than any potential answer. Just that we're willing to turn that lens on ourselves because of the thing that we are covering. I mean, you do see more women. I think you see more African Americans on as pundits and as analysts right now because we've got Barack Obama and because we've got right. Hillary Clinton in the race. Whether that's because of embarrassment on the part of the media or ambition, I don't know. But either way, I'll take it. I think that it's, you know, I'm openly gay. I'm a woman in a male-dominated field. I'm also white, so I feel like I feel some privilege and some discrimination. But ultimately, you go to work every day and you deal with the slights that come your way, whether they're part of larger systems of oppression or just some jerk. You kind of have to just, you know, get your work done. And so I don't tend to dwell on it. I don't know how much of it I feel compared to other people, but I think it's there, like it is in any workplace.
Yeah. Well, you're so good. I've told you this before. You're just so good.
Thank you. You
do your work and you've got great thoughts about things. And so people listen to you.
Well,
and that's what it's about, right, on those shows.
Also, I'm very cheap.
At least for now.
You can buy me in bulk at this point. That's why you see me so frequently.
That's funny. Well, let's start with her very large win in Kentucky last night. Very large win in West Virginia. Wins in these Appalachian areas. What's going on?
You know, it's interesting to try to figure out if this means that in the general election, those voters would choose Hillary Clinton as a Democratic nominee, but would not choose Barack Obama as a Democratic nominee. That is the case that Senator Clinton is making. She's saying, listen, I'm winning with these types of voters, and I'm winning in these types of places. And if we want, as Democrats, to try to compete with those people and in those places, then you better pick me because I'm winning them over Barack Obama.
Right.
It's a very sweet, tidy argument. The problem is that when you look at the polling among white working-class voters, for example, those voters are going to John McCain over either of the Democratic nominees. So are these places that are not going to be competitive for Democrats anyway? Is this simply a measure of how voters feel when asked to choose between these two Democrats and it doesn't transpose to a general election?
Mm-hmm.
I think Senator Clinton has a hard argument to make that these primary wins translate to a better approach to the general. I've never really bought the argument.
Yeah. And so tell me what the inside scoop is on her staying in the race. He now has the number of pledged delegates that he will need. She's still figuring in Michigan, where he wasn't on the ballot, Florida, where he didn't campaign, to say that she's ahead in popular vote. I mean, how does she keep selling that? And why do the Democrats let her keep selling that when, as far as I can tell, it's his?
Why is the Barack Obama campaign I think the real question is, why is the Obama campaign and why are Obama's surrogates and why are Obama's supporters not pushing back harder against all of these new goalposts, all of these new metrics that the Clinton campaign is defining? I think there is a very dangerous overconfidence on the Obama side, in which they think they've got this thing, they think they understand the math, they think they're being nice and letting Hillary Clinton spin out her little strategy, and they're not going to argue against her, let her make a fool of herself. Kind of this sort of, oh, you know, that's a marginal issue. They're not really paying attention to her as a contender anymore. And meanwhile, she is putting this game into overtime. by raising the Florida and Michigan issue, by talking, you know, she's not threatening to bring it to the convention, but everything she's doing right now, it looks like that she does intend to bring it to the convention. All of this stuff is putting this game in overtime, and if it goes to the convention, it doesn't matter who the nominee is. I believe the Democrats will lose against John McCain if they don't decide until that late. Mm-hmm. I think the Obama campaign is making a huge mistake in not arguing against Hillary Clinton staying in the race. I think the time to be nice about it is over.
Really? Interesting.
I do. And I'm not for Obama or Clinton, one or the other. I would like to see the Democrats put forth a credible shot at winning the White House in November.
Right.
Going to the convention is a sure recipe for John McCain winning. And if they don't argue against going to the convention, that's where this inevitably is going to end up.
Yeah. Well, do you think there's a measure of, here is this formidable candidate, you know, her husband's in the White House for 8 years. The Clinton name is the Democratic Party. And here you have this fairly young, he's not all that young, but this guy who hasn't been in the political world as much. And whenever I watch him, I think, you know, he's very tender with her. He doesn't want to criticize too much because he's sort of taking on this big fixture in the Democratic Party. So he's holding off.
Can I tell you, and can I be really self-centered and make a Rachel Maddow analogy as to how I understand him? Hillary Clinton, this is obnoxious of me to do it. I recognize. I'm sorry. But yesterday morning, I was on the Today Show with Geraldine Ferraro. And that was such an honor for me. I'd never met her before. I was 11 when she ran for vice president with Walter Mondale. That was 1984. I was born in 1973. And we were interviewed by Meredith Vieira about sexism and whether sexism has a role. It has played a role in Hillary Clinton's campaign fortunes this year. And I sat there on the couch next to her. We're both being interviewed by Meredith Vieira. It's this incredibly respectful setting. I am in awe of the woman I am sitting next to. And she starts talking about how she sees sexism playing out in the campaign, and I could not disagree with her more. I just thank her. And what I did, and if you watch the tape or if you saw it yesterday morning, you will see I just was flummoxed. I sat there, mouth open, staring at Geraldine Ferraro, saying nothing and not contradicting her and letting her make her arguments. I kind of peeped a couple of times, but really did nothing. And I'm known for being a real loudmouth on television and fighting with anybody. I didn't fight with Geraldine Ferraro, A, because I respect her, B, because I was a little bit in awe of being on the same stage with her, and C, because I was so shocked that she was so wrong. If I was going to do it again, I would have, you know, in my mind, I've redone that segment a million times, and I've spoken up, and I've gotten over being flummoxed. But I think that Senator Obama is essentially treating Hillary Clinton as a respected elder who he's waiting, and he's waiting for her to stop talking so he can take over.
Right.
I think it was a mistake in media when I did it yesterday morning. I think it's a mistake right now with Obama doing it and letting her spin this thing out. I think she is outplaying him right now, big time.
Yeah. Well, what about the speech in, which again was, this guy can give speeches. Ooh, he's good. The speech in Des Moines.
I like Barack Obama's speeches. I think even people who disagree with him enjoy hearing him speak. I didn't think that this was one of his best, honestly, especially because it was kind of set up to be an inspirational speech. You know, back to Iowa, back to the start of the campaign, incredibly lovely setting with the Capitol behind him and everything. And it just, maybe at this point I'm beyond. I feel such a sense of urgency about the campaign that I'm not looking to be moved. Maybe I wasn't ready for it, but I feel like the thing that is going to make him impressive as a politician right now, which again, this is the primaries. The Democrats are trying to pick a candidate to beat John McCain in November.
Right.
I think what's going to be impressive right now is real tactical brilliance. And that's a rhetorical eloquence and impressiveness was not the thing I was looking for last night, and I don't think I really found it that much.
Interesting. Yeah. What are they going to do? Who's meeting to decide what's going to? It's May 31st, is that right? What are they going to do with Florida and with Michigan?
I have a little bit of a outside the mainstream perspective on this, so take this with a grain of salt.
Right.
This is my kooky idea, but when the Rules and Bylaws Committee meets on May 31st to consider Florida and Michigan, it doesn't really matter what they decide that day. I think what's happening right now is this is like at the end of a basketball game, the team that is losing stops the clock. They use all their timeouts and then they start fouling.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea is that you just want to stop the clock. You want to extend it. You want to get to overtime. You want more. You want another chance. Once that process starts on May 31st, it's rules and bylaws, doesn't matter what they decide. The Clinton campaign will appeal it. The appeal will go to the Credentials Committee. The Credentials Committee process almost inevitably ends up having almost inevitably ends up in Denver. The process that starts on May 31st ends in Denver.
Mm.
I think if Barack Obama's campaign and the Democratic powers that be don't come up with a way to make Obama the nominee before May 31st, the decision happens in Denver and the Democrats lose. I think that it's 10 days to suicide for the Democratic Party right now.
And what are you hearing about what the Clinton campaign plans to do, that it affects her political future, that she needs to be gracious about this, that at some point she needs to realize what the math is?
You know, if you win, nobody remembers whether you were gracious or not. I think I have never believed that, you know, this was that she was looking for the best consolation prize or that she was looking for the best, the most attractive exit or the most graceful exit. I have always believed through this, you know, ever since she declared herself that she was in this to win this. And that I think it's no holds barred. And it is, you know, do what you need to do to win. And what she needs to do to win right now is to get into overtime. To get to the convention to win the summer, essentially, to continue competing. She's doing much better now than she was in March. She would love for the campaign to be decided over the summer rather than being decided during the spring. I don't have insider contacts and I don't have magic information about this stuff. I'm just going on what she's doing and what she's saying, but I don't think she's looking for anything other than the presidency, and I think the only way to get there is to buy herself more time.
But I still don't understand, Rachel, how she gets there.
She gets there. I mean, if you can get to the point where there is something unresolved at the convention, that we don't know what the magic number of delegates is that provides a clinching moment for the that provides a clinch for the nominee. That's what gets called into question as of May 31st. Once the Rules and Bylaws Committee takes up the issue of Florida and Michigan, once it is a contested matter, when any of it is unresolved, then we don't know what number of delegates you need in order to clinch the nomination.
I see.
So that means that it gets decided at the convention. Once things are decided at the convention, there's no such thing as a pledged delegate. There's no such thing as a committed delegate. There's no such thing as a declared delegate or an important endorsement. All change at the convention. Anything can happen then. Nobody who has been elected from any state in the union is required to do what their voters told them to do. Once they're at the convention, they can do anything they want. That's the one place Hillary Clinton could win.
Rachel Maddow, host of the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio and a political analyst for MSNBC. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. A couple lines are open if you'd like to grab them before they're no longer open. 414-227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we will talk about being female in politics and ask if Hillary Clinton's bid for the White House has changed the face of American politics forever, or is it served as a reminder of why few women pursue high office in the first place. Our guests from the Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University and also a professor of political science at Beloit College will be joining us. Rachel Maddow is here now. 800-486-8655 is the number, and we go to Patty from Wauwatosa first. Hello, Patty.
Hi. Hi, Rachel. I enjoy watching so much on CNN.
Thank you.
And on MSNBC.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Thanks, Kevin.
But I watch it every night. And I was watching the Today Show that you brought that up, and I was glued to it thinking, okay, come on, because I figured that you didn't agree with Geraldine Ferraro, and I was just so disappointed when you didn't say anything because I knew.
So was I.
Yeah.
I was pretty sure I knew what was in your head, but Anyway, but my point really is that if there really is all this sexism out there that Geraldine Ferraro is talking about, then how can she constantly say, well, I'm the better candidate? There either is sexism, which means she's going to struggle in the general, or there isn't, and she's going to be the president.
Oh, so if she's making a claim that she's being denied the nomination because of sexism among Democrats, does that interfere with her ability to say she's the best candidate for the
right.
general? Sexism is what's holding her back now.
She's saying both ends. I'm the best candidate, but, oh, I lost because of sexism. Well, then what about the general? What
Maybe she has a very high opinion of Republicans and thinks that Republicans are much less sexist than Democrats. No, I'm kidding. That's a very, very good question. I honestly feel like the issue of sexism in the primaries is... I'm so happy that you're doing your next hour on that, Kathleen, because I think it is something that requires long-form, sensitive discussion where people feel like they can actually say what they think. Because right now we're in a position where the accusation of sexism is being used as a political weapon, which means it's not always being used honestly. And if we're going to allege that there is sexism in the Democratic primary process that is holding back Hillary Clinton unfairly, then those allegations need to be open for discussion. I mean, what's happening is that people like, for example, Ms. Ferraro are saying, when I see Barack Obama brush his shoulders off and say, I'm brushing my shoulders off, I'm getting rid of this thing that's bothering me in the primary campaign, that's a sexist gesture. I don't see that as a sexist gesture. I see that as a completely different cultural reference point.
I didn't see that either.
That can't be the end of the discussion. The fact that some people see that as sexist can't mean, okay, that was sexist. It has to be open for discussion because it is a matter of interpretation to a certain extent. To allege that somebody is being discriminatory to another candidate, another Democrat is being discriminatory on the basis of sexism, is a serious allegation. And so, therefore, you can't just assert it. You have to be willing to defend it. And we're at the point right now where it's assertion versus assertion. It's nasty and personal, and it's so far not very constructive, I think.
We're getting a lot more of this, or maybe I'm paying more attention to it, but I think we're getting a lot more of people who are appearing on television saying, I'm certainly not racist, but I wouldn't vote for a colored man.
We are getting people who are willing to say that in Man on the Street interviews, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which just astounds me.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I think that people who work on issues like this all the time and people who endure the brunt of racism in America for a long time have been trying to make the case that racism is real against a lot of people who say we don't need to work on it anymore because racism is over in this country. And this, there's going to be a lot of fodder for those future discussions after this campaign that we didn't have before.
And yeah. Can I just say one more thing?
Sure, Patty.
That it has been amazing to see the pundits, the female and black, and just all different opinions. And gosh, if this is what the new face of America is, I'm so excited. I hope it continues, and I hope we're not going to have this all drop off once the election is over. Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, the real question is whether all of us in the junior pundit corps, which is where I think of myself, it's kind of like junior ROTC, you know, or junior varsity. The junior pundit corps right now is obviously much bigger than the senior pundit corps, but right now it is also much more diverse. And the real question and the real test for the media as an industry is whether or not some of us in the juniors get kicked upstairs and get put into the host jobs and the anchor jobs and taken off the panels and put on the
right.
And put in the one-on-one interview situations. It's the question of whether or not we ascend, but it sure is nice for us to have our feet in the door.
Yeah. So does that depend on who wins the White House?
Good question. It probably more depends on who owns the media companies.
Hmm. Yeah. Patty, thanks so much for
Patty,
your call.
Thanks.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Rachel Maddow is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls, and let's go next to Marty from Reedsburg. Hey, Marty.
Thank you for taking my call. I love your guest. I watch her all the time.
Thank you.
My comment is, if Hillary Clinton doesn't at some point, if she continues this fight, and she has every right to, I like both candidates, but if she continues it, my fear is the Republicans are going to end up winning. So is her desire to run for president larger than her desire for the Democratic Party to finally take this country out of the mess it's in?
Well,
and I'll take my answer off the air because I'm probably going to lose you. So.
All right. Thanks, Marty.
Thanks, Marty. None of us can get inside the mind of the candidate on this. And it's interesting that there are so few sources for reporters in this campaign who are people who are real confidants of Hillary Clinton. We hear a lot about what's being discussed in the campaign. We hear very few people, if anybody, saying, I have spoken directly with the senator about this and I know her thoughts on this. She's not somebody who we can, I don't think we have access to her psychology. But I can tell you, just from my own psychology, that you can't win if you don't play. She really wants to be president, and she knows that there is no chance she can be president unless she is the Democratic nominee. If her becoming the nominee has to happen through a process that makes it less likely that the Democratic Party will win the White House, well, the odds are still with her. to a certain extent. Yeah, there's a chance the Democrats won't win, but there's a certainty that she won't win unless she gets the nomination. So I think she is doing everything she possibly can to win the nomination, because that keeps alive even some slim hope that she will be the next president. I think she's playing the odds to be as aggressive as possible in her search for the White House. It will be up to the Democratic Party to stop her from doing that if they see her ambition as contrary to the best interests of the party.
Jeff from Dubuque, Iowa. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Good morning, Kathleen. I'm a first-time caller and delighted to reach you. Here's what I find troubling about Senator Clinton's candidacy, and that is a woman who purports to say to want to reclaim the moral high ground for this country is. Her own candidacy is based on stealing the votes from Florida and Michigan in order to keep this going. See, there's no moral integrity in this candidate because of her blind ambition. And subsequently, that's what galvanizes me to support Obama even more and more each day when I see somebody like her saying, you know, trying to do what she agreed not to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll listen to your comments on that and
thank
carry
you.
On.
Jeff, thank you. I don't think that there is an absolute moral high ground on the issue of Florida and Michigan. I think Florida and Michigan are a strategic issue rather than a moral issue. I think the arguments about what to do about Florida and Michigan will be conducted in moral terms, as if there is some obvious right thing and some obvious wrong thing to do. But when I look at it just kind of as a citizen, I don't feel like there's a big right and wrong question here. I think it's a strategic question. I mean, this was a fight between the state parties and the national party in which there was a rule set about what the candidates could do, and the candidates followed the rules, but then they never came to an agreement about what would happen with the delegates. I just don't see this as the great civil rights issue of our time. I see this as a procedural strategic issue that the campaigns are going to need to fight out. They're going to say it's a civil rights issue on both sides. But it doesn't resonate that way with me.
Yeah. And yet, though, they both agreed to the rules here. How in the world, Florida might be a slightly different case, but how in the world can you agree to the rules in Michigan and only have her name on the ballot and then say that she won it? You just can't do that, can you? That's not how the game is played.
Well, how is this game played, though?
I don't know.
I mean, I've always felt like it is the great luxury of those of us who are outside this process to sort of condemn the people who are actually making these strategic decisions for being underhanded, scurrilous, or having a lack of morality. We have that great luxury because we're outside the process. Inside the process, they're just trying to win,
right.
And they'll come up with arguments that may or may not be morally or even rationally sound, but they're trying to win. And that's why I'm not inside politics. That's why I'm outside it commenting on it, because I don't ever really want to be a person playing those games. I think it's
right.
Pretty gross territory.
Yeah. Nancy from West Bend. Hi.
Hi. Rachel, it is an honor and a privilege to speak with you. I enjoy your work so awfully much.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not going to say the things that I originally mentioned, because there's two other issues very quickly and fast. The guy that just called and also a person last month, or last hour, I am a resident of Florida. I voted for Hillary once. Barack Obama's name was on the ballot, as was Hillary's. Barack Obama had an ad that was that came across on our TV because it was a nationally syndicated cable TV ad,
right,
that they couldn't pull in Florida. So he actually did have an ad on, and I voted for Hillary. I also want to be sure that the young women that are coming up, Rachel, yourself included, please recall the work that those of us who are feminists from way back, I share actually a birthday and the same year and date and the same age as Hillary, with her, and we've been working very hard for a woman to have a chance to do this. I think that she's been treated quite unfairly in many respects. I intend to vote for her again, even if I have to write her name in.
Thank you for the call, and thank you for your passion on it. I have to say, I can't believe that it has been 24 years since Geraldine Ferraro was the vice presidential nominee. It's taken us 24 years to get this close again to having a woman on the ticket. It is unbelievable.
We're out of time. Rachel, thank you so much. You're a wonderful guest, always. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Kathleen.
Rachel Maddow, host of The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America and a political analyst for MSNBC. We thank Rhonda Fanning for booking both Barbara Walters and Rachel Maddow. Pretty good hour, huh? And we have news coming up, and we'll return with more conversation on the Ideas Network. of Wisconsin Public Radio.